Hi, everyone, and welcome to Home in Progress, brought to you by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore, offering expert advice, premium paint, and all the tools you need to keep your home moving forward. I'm Dan Hansen, and today's show is packed with practical fixes for some of the most common frustrations in DIY home projects. Coming up a little later, we're going to tackle a topic that drives a lot of people crazy from time to time, paint flashing. It's an uneven, patchy look that shows up on your walls after you paint. We're going to explain what causes it, how to fix it, and most importantly, how to avoid it. Right before that, we'll walk you through the process of fixing squeaky floors. And coming up next, we're going to take a look at masking tape. It seems simple, but if you've ever peeled it off only to put paint with it, or you've struggled to get clean lines, you know there's a right way and a wrong way to tape. We're going to help you avoid the most common mistakes and get great results every time. But first, I've got something I've got to get off my chest. I think my phone is reading my little mind, you know, my little pea brain. I think my phone is reading that. And I'm not joking. I'm being serious. I know there are conspiracy theory people out there who talk about how our phones can read our minds. All right. I've run into these folks, and a lot of the time I blow that stuff off. A couple years ago, I really thought it was nuts. You know, absolutely tinfoil hat stuff. But as I go places and have conversations and then suddenly start getting served ads, you know, on social media or whatever, that the ads seem to be entirely based on the conversations that I've had. Well, after having that experience, you know, I've come to accept the fact that the phone is listening to me. All right. I think it's listening to all of us. And I think most of us have come to that conclusion. We know that. You know, we've all experienced that. But I'm literally talking about my phone reading my mind, knowing my thoughts somehow, and then sending me ads based on those thoughts. And like I said, I'm not joking. And I bet you're thinking that I am, or that I'm crazy, or that I've got some weird twist to this where it's not, where it will make sense in a way. No, I mean exactly what I'm saying. My phone, I'm looking at you, phone, right now. I'm holding it, looking at it, and I know it's reading my mind right now. Here's what led me to this. And I've had a number of scenarios or experiences that are similar to what I'm going to describe, but never so profound as the one that I'm going to tell you about. You know, I've thought about things just out of the blue. They pop into my mind. I don't Google them. I don't talk about them out loud to anybody. It's just a thought that goes through my head. I spend a little time thinking about it. And then hours later, maybe a day later, I don't know, all of a sudden there are ads that are showing up about that exact same thing. That has happened. And that's weird, but maybe coincidental. All right. I get all that. Well, not long ago, something happened that changed my mind. It's not accidental. It's reading my mind. And this thing is not fun to talk about. You know, it's not fun to talk about. It's not going to be fun to listen to parts of it. I'm sorry. Buckle up. This isn't Saturday morning fare. I understand that. But this is the time slot that they've given me. So anyway, quick, finish your Cheerios, slurp down your coffee, you know, suck down your oatmeal real fast. This is your final warning. Give you 1 second to finish up. All right, here we go. A while back, I'm getting ready for work. Right. And in the bathroom, I'm moving around and I stub my toe. Hurts like crazy. You know, stub my toe. Hurts like crazy. I'm hopping around. I look down and I see the nail has split. You know, it's bent back. It's split. It's a mess. It's not good. It hurts. And then I'm looking at it and I start to wonder, why did that nail, you know, crack so easily and split so easily? And then I started to look at and consider the condition, the health condition of my toenails. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, if you haven't finished eating still, you got seconds now to get this down. Anyway, I'm looking at my toenails, wondering about the state of their health. I'm sure this is 100% normal. People do this all the time. We're constantly evaluating our toenail health. Anyway, I'm doing that in the bathroom. I'm wondering about my toenails. I'm not Googling anything. I'm not talking to anybody. There's nobody there. You know, I'm alone in that space. And I didn't take this conversation anywhere else either. You know, this was a Dan-only conversation, you know, until now. But as I'm sitting there, I'm looking at them, at my toenails, and I'm wondering if they're healthy. Do they look the right color? Are they too thick? Are they supposed to be that thick? Is there something going on? Am I just old? You know, I don't know. I'm wondering these things. And then I think, wait a minute. What if it's a fungus? You know, what if I have toenail fungus of some kind? And that is so gross to think about. You know, I'm appalled at myself. I'm disgusted with myself just thinking that I might have this toenail fungus or whatever's going on. You know, all I can think is that I've got mushrooms starting to sprout down there. But then as I'm thinking all those horrible thoughts, I remember something else. Miracle of miracles, I think I've got toenail fungus stuff in the medicine cabinet, right? Who doesn't? I think I do. I open up the cabinet door, and after a quick search, sure enough, there it is, a dusty little brown bottle that's been in there for 8 years, you know, expired since 2019 with the label fungicide, I don't know how to say that, fungicide all over it. I don't remember why I've got that bottle, but I was thrilled to see it. I read the words. I didn't touch the bottle. I didn't grab it and use it, but I did read it. And I was thinking really hard about it. You know, all of this was really, really powerfully in my brain because I was grossed out by the idea. It was all consuming for these few minutes that I was searching. Anyway, I decided I was going to put it on just in case after my toe stopped bleeding because I figured it was going to sting like crazy, you know, in the state that it was in. So I put it back in the medicine cabinet and that was it. You know, I didn't Google about it. I didn't talk about it afterwards. Of course, I didn't talk about it. Like I said, I hate the idea of talking about it. I hate talking about it now. It's gross, but it's for the greater good. I'm doing this for all of you out there. Anyway, all I did was think about it. No Googling, no searching, no talking, just thoughts. And then, lo and behold, the next day, finally getting to my point, I'm literally blown away. I still remember this moment, sitting there, just stunned, looking at my phone. I'm looking at Facebook, and all of a sudden, an ad comes straight across the screen as I'm scrolling, and it's an ad full of weird misshapen toes, yellow toenails, you know, just horrible. And the header on the ad says, "Are you worrying about toenail fungus?" I mean, come on. How can that ad just be a random ad out there? How is that even possible? You know, I'm sure some of you are going to say that maybe it would have always been there. And, you know, now that I'm thinking about toenail fungus, I just happen to clue into it. I don't buy that for a second because the toes in that ad were so misshapen. They were so hideous. You know, they were mutant toes. They would have gotten my attention no matter what. Because it was ridiculously, you know, a gross ad. The only real solution, the only real conclusion that I can make is that my phone is literally reading my mind. So I don't know about you. I don't know if you've ever run into that. That's my musing for the day. I would love to know if you have any ideas or feedback on what I just said. You know, not my toenails. Turns out they were healthy and fine. So everybody can breathe easy. When I'm in the pool, you don't have to worry what's happening, at least not from my toenails. My toenails are fine. I want to know instead what you're thinking, what your ideas are about your phone reading your mind. Has that ever happened to you? Let me know. Radio@repcolite.com. I'm serious. Reach out and let me know. I want to know. All right. Enough of that. Let's get on to the show for today. And here's what I've got. I'm really sorry that that was the thing I started the show with, but it's been on my mind. I wanted to talk about it. Anyway, coming up at the end of the show, we're going to be talking about choosing colors for west-facing spaces, and I'm going to be giving you the last chance for a while to win one of two Repcolite gift certificates for $100. In fact, since it's the last one of these that I'm going to do for a little bit, I want to extend the opportunity through the whole show. You know, maybe you're only catching this part. This is all you heard. You heard the toenail story, and now you've got to go somewhere else. Maybe to a therapist. I don't know. If that's all you're going to hear, you can't ride with me till the end of the show. I still want to give you a chance to win. And here's how it's going to work. You've got until 10 a.m. today to email me at radio@repcolite.com, R-E-P-C-O-L-I-T-E.com, radio@repcolite.com. Tell me, you know, tell me what your next project is, or tell me about a topic that you want to hear on the show, or maybe your favorite Repcolite location. Maybe brag up your favorite Repcolite employee. Tell me your favorite song. I really don't care. Just email me and tell me something fun, something interesting, whatever. Get your emails in before 10 a.m. this morning, and then at 10 or right after, I'll draw two random winners from amongst all the entries. So email right now, radio@repcolite.com, and I'll remind you throughout the show. But now you've got a head start. All right, so at the end of the show, we're going to be talking about flashing, paint flashing. It's not probably what you're thinking. It's a paint problem. It's kind of common. We'll talk about how you avoid that. We'll also be talking about fixing squeaks in your floor, and we'll also be talking about masking tape. Basically, I'm going to look at three big complaints that we hear all the time when it comes to masking tape, and most likely, you've experienced at least one, if not all of them, at some point. They're common, they're frustrating, but the good news is they're completely avoidable, and we're going to get to that topic right after this. Home in Progress is brought to you by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. Top-tier paint, expert advice. Your next project is way easier than you think it's going to be. All right, let's talk about masking tape. And I want to talk about, you know, three big complaints that we hear all the time when it comes to masking tape. And most likely, you've experienced at least one of these, if not all of them, at some point. They're pretty common, they're frustrating, and the good news is they're really avoidable. So let's walk through them one by one and talk about how to get clean, professional results every single time you use masking tape. Now, the first complaint I get a fair amount is this one. I can never get sharp lines. You know, I've always got paint bleeding under the tape. Well, if that's the case, you're completely not alone. You know, you spend the time taping everything off, you paint carefully, and then when you peel the tape off, it looks like you tried to do the job, you know, blindfolded. Wavy edges, all kinds of little fuzzy lines, you know, little runs of paint that slipped underneath, whatever. You know what it looks like. It's frustrating. But most of the time, that problem starts with the tape you're using. Now, I've tested all of the tapes that we sell. You know, I haven't tested all tapes, but all the masking tapes we sell, I've tested them all. You know, the cheaper tan stuff, the blue painter's tape, and high-end options like frog tape. I've tested all of these. And over again, frog tape comes out on top. It's not perfect, not 100% perfect, but it's consistently better than everything else I tried. Now, I do want to explain this a little bit more just to make sure we're all on the same page. All tapes really can do a decent job. That is the other thing that I ran into when I was doing this testing. All of them could do a good job if you, you know, really did everything right. You know, even the cheap ones could produce good results, or at least mostly good. You know, I would say I'd have been happy with the results of all of these, provided, you know, you do apply the product in the right way, apply the tape in the right way. For example, let's just focus on that regular blue painter's tape, not the frog tape, just the regular blue painter's tape. You definitely can get razor sharp lines with that if you apply the tape the right way and go through all of that work, which we're going to talk about in just a minute here. But the thing with the frog tape, the reason I like that one a little bit better is that the good results came a little bit easier. Now, you got perfect results if you did the application the right way. But even if you didn't go through all of that work, you still got really, really, really good results with just the frog tape. So that's why I like frog tape a little bit better. Frog tape comes in a number of different varieties, but they all share one key feature, something called paint block technology. Now, it's fun, it's sciencey and all of that, but the concept is really pretty simple. The edge of the tape is treated with a special polymer that reacts with water-based paint. So the moment the paint touches the tape, the polymer gels, and that essentially forms a barrier that locks out, you know, the bleed through. You know, it locks the paint out and doesn't allow it to bleed underneath the tape. And yeah, it's a little more expensive than the basic stuff, but the good results are easier to get because of that paint block technology. And to me, that makes it worth it. And here's the thing, it doesn't take any more time to use frog tape. You know, and if I'm going to spend 10 minutes taping off a wall or taping off some trim or 20 minutes or whatever it takes, I'd rather get it right the first time than spend more time trying to fix, you know, little bleeds and stuff like that where the paint got under the tape. So that's why I like frog tape. That's why I generally use it. And right now, through the end of August, we've got inch and inch and a half blue frog tape on special at all Repco Light locations. So if you've never tried frog tape before, you can pick up a single roll and just see what you think. I think you're going to like it. All right. Now, using the right tape is important. I mentioned that. But so is using the right technique. I was hinting at that all along. Taping's a skill. And pretty much like every skill, it improves with a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of practice. So when you're applying tape, here's what you need to do to get really good results no matter what you're using. First off, of course, the surface has to be clean. Make sure it's clean. Make sure it's dry. You know, don't wipe it clean and then try to put tape on a damp surface. That's just dumb. That's not going to work. So it's got to be dry and it's got to be clean. When you're applying the tape, don't stretch the tape as you apply it. You know, you want to gently lay it in place. So use shorter strips rather than long ones. And then once the tape is down, here's the big trick. Once the tape is down, press the edge down firmly, you know, burnishing it with like a putty knife or a dull blade or something like that. And that's going to ensure a really tight seal. You know, no matter what tape you're using, that's going to give you a really good seal. The big thing here is just be careful not to press so hard that you damage the surface underneath. All right. So that brings me to the next complaint that we sometimes get. And it's this: when I remove the tape, the paint comes with it. All right, usually this happens for one of a couple different reasons. You know, either you're applying the tape over fresh paint that hasn't fully cured, or you've left the tape on too long after painting. Now, even though your paint might feel dry to the touch after a couple hours, it can still be soft underneath for days. So if you use a high adhesion tape on that kind of surface, there's a really good chance you're gonna peel it off when you remove that tape. You're gonna peel paint off when you remove that tape. That's why delicate surface painter tapes exist. Frog tape makes a yellow one for exactly this reason. It's great for freshly painted walls, wallpaper, decorative finishes, anything fragile. But even then, when you're using delicate surface tape, you still wanna give that new paint at least a full day to cure out and to dry out before taping over it. 2 or 3 days is even better, but at least a full day before you put the tape on, even though you're using delicate surface tape. So use the right tape. That's one way to get around this problem of paint peeling off when you remove the tape. The other reason that that happens is that you left the tape on too long. So once you finish painting, don't walk away and leave the tape on until the paint dries. The right time to take the tape off is actually while the paint is still wet. You know, as the paint dries, it forms this continuous film that can bond to both the wall and the tape. And if that film hardens too much or becomes too, you know, consistent, pulling that tape later can actually cause the paint to tear or peel as you're removing it. So remove the tape right away after painting. Just take your time and be careful, because the paint on the tape is still going to be wet. You know, don't let it brush against you or your floors, your trim, your furniture. Just be careful as you're removing it. If you can't do that, before you tear that tape off, take a razor blade and run it right along the edge of where the tape meets the wall and score that paint film. That way, when you remove the tape, it's not going to tear into the paint on the wall. That's a really big deal. All right, the third complaint we get, and it's incredibly common: my tape keeps tearing when I'm trying to use it. All right, you pull a strip, it splits. You try to apply it, it shreds in your hands. Drives you nuts, and usually this boils down to one of two things. You're either using really poor quality tape — don't do that. Dollar store tape, don't do it. Go get good stuff. Or maybe even more likely, you're using tape that's been sitting in your garage since your last project 3 years ago. You know, heat, cold, humidity, all of those things break down the adhesive and they weaken the backing paper. If it's been through a few Michigan summers and winters in a dusty basement or your truck bed or whatever, do yourself a favor. On your next project, toss that tape out, get a new fresh roll. High quality tape stored properly is going to save you time, frustration, you know, all of that down the road. It's definitely worth it. All right, before we wrap this segment up, one question that does come up a lot, especially from contractors, and it's this: why tape at all? You know, good painters don't need tape. You know, a seasoned pro with thousands of hours on the job can probably cut in a wall with perfect accuracy. That is 100% true. But if you're a DIYer, or if you're a contractor running multiple crews with varying levels of experience, taping is really, you know, one of the best ways to maintain quality control. It's a safety net. Keeps your lines clean, your work consistent, and your results looking really professional, even if you're not on site to supervise every single brush stroke. You know, it's not about taking shortcuts, really. It's about making sure the job gets done right. So tape does play out as beneficial, even to contractors in certain situations. For DIYers, I would say it's really something you almost got to do almost every time if you want good results consistently. All right, masking tape. Not glamorous, it's not a fun part of the paint job, but it does help you achieve really good professional results every time if you do it right. All right, next time you're starting a project, don't forget to grab a roll or two. And if you are painting this month, all August, check out the blue frog tape that's on special at all Repcolite stores. All right, squeaky floors. They are an absolute pain in the neck, but fortunately, fixing them is easier than you think. We're going to get to that right after this. This is Home in Progress, where the to-do list is long, and that's all right. We're not crabbing at you. We're not going to yell at you. That's how it is. It's how ours is, too. It's proudly supported by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore, because home projects are easier when you've got people you can trust. All right, let's talk about floor squeaks, right? Floor squeaks. And really, these things can drive you absolutely nuts. You know, I remember having little kids, babies specifically, and it's such a cliche. I know it, but it's true. I remember with these babies how we'd sit in their room, you know, and finally you'd get them to sleep, right? Finally, they quit crying or fussing or whatever they're doing, and they go to sleep, and you carefully, you know, creep across the floor, and you put them carefully in the crib, you know, so quietly, so gently. It's like you're handling nitroglycerin or something. You know, you finally got them settled, and you back away. You watch them roll over a little bit. You hold your breath. You're panicking. Are they going to wake up again? And then they settle, and they go back to sleep. You know, relief settles in, right? You start to leave the room. And then, for me anyway, you stop at the doorway, and you're just staring at this hallway. You know, it's 10 foot long, 12 foot long, something like that. It wasn't a huge hallway at my old house, but it was full of squeaky floorboards. And somehow, I know I've got to navigate that area by memory, you know, and avoid all these little spots where the floor squeaks, you know. So you go back and forth, you're zigzagging all over the place, putting a foot down here, and you start to hear the squeak go. So you quick pull your foot back. It's like you're Indiana Jones, really, is what it felt like. You know, I can't tell you how many times I would almost get to the end of that hallway before I ended up stepping on, you know, the wrong spot. And suddenly the house is filled with that horrible squeak. And then, like an alarm clock, it wakes up the kids and it all starts over again. So squeaky floors, they are not fun at all. They're a real pain in the neck. Real pain in the neck. Real. I should edit that out, but I think I'll leave it just so you know what I deal with all the time. Do you know what it's like to be talking to people in public? You know, at least on the radio, I get to edit all of that stuff out. I'm sorry. This is a big dumb tangent, but now my voice cracked and I'm really focused on it. On the radio, I edit a lot of those out just because I don't want to deal with them all the time. But in real life, really speaking to people, and my voice does that. It's like feels like Mickey Mouse or something. That's not even accurate. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm perpetually in a state of puberty. Explains my height. I'm at that state of puberty right before the growth spurt, and it's perpetual. I'm stuck here. Anyway, floor squeaks. They're a real pain in the neck. So let's talk about fixing them. And happily, most squeaks are kind of easy to fix. And I guess to start, let's first talk about what's really making that sound, because maybe most of you are aware, fully aware of what's making that sound. For me, I kind of didn't know. I guess I assumed what it was, but I didn't really know what it was. And once you know what's going on, it makes it a lot easier to fix. All right, floor squeaks happen because something that's not supposed to be moving is moving. Something that's supposed to be tight isn't tight. You know, and a number of reasons make this happen. You know, over time, wood dries out. It shrinks just a little bit. That can be a part of it. Fasteners can loosen. Parts that used to sit snugly together start to rub a little bit, and that rubbing is where the noise comes from. All of that. If you've got access to the underside of your floor, you know, like from an unfinished basement or a crawl space or something, you can often spot the issue really quickly. You know, a lot of the times the subfloor was nailed instead of screwed down, and those nails don't always hold. It will loosen up a little bit over time. And in some cases, those nails aren't even driven into the joists like they're supposed to be. You know, if you go down there and look, you'll find nails coming out of the joists on angles, you know, kind of half in, half out. Or sometimes they're like a row of nails, like an inch off from the floor joist. They completely missed the joist as they were nailing it. And that means your subfloor over that particular joist, that particular area, it's just floating, right? It's just sitting on top of the floor joist. It's not secured to it. Now, in pretty much all of these instances, when you walk across the floor, over those areas, that subfloor is going to flex, it's going to hit the joist, it's going to rub against that nail that's part in, part out is going to squeak a little bit. That's where the squeaking is coming from, just that movement. Now, also keep in mind that even when nails do hit that joist, you know, even when they're dead on into that joist, like I said earlier, they can work loose over time, especially if construction adhesive wasn't used during the install. And even though gluing the subfloor to the joist is standard practice right now, it hasn't always been the case. So plenty of older homes or, you know, quick builds, they can skip that step entirely. And without the glue, you're really just relying entirely on nails or screws to hold everything tight. So that's what's going on. That's where the squeak is coming from. Now, finding and fixing the spots is going to be relatively easy for the most part if you've got access to the underside of the floor from the basement or a crawl space. You know, it's not the only way to fix these things, and we'll talk about other ones if you don't have that access, but it is the easiest way. Now, if you're able to go down there and look up and see the floor joists and the subfloor and all of that, it's really straightforward. Just get a partner who's going to walk the floor, you know, on the main level where the squeaks are while you're down below. You know, you're going to be down below looking up, trying to pinpoint the trouble spots. So you're listening for squeaks. You're watching for movement. You know, as the other person walks across the floor above you, sometimes, you know, if you're close enough to it, you'll actually see small amounts of dust maybe puffing out from where the subfloor meets the joist. That's possible. And if you see that, it's a telltale sign there's movement there. You can also put your fingers along that spot, you know, that little corner, if you will, where the joist meets the subfloor. You can put your finger along there and feel for any shift or bounce. You know, you should feel a little bit when the person walks over that trouble area. Another thing to look at is look carefully at the nails or the fasteners. If they're not driven into the joist cleanly, if they're, you know, missing the joist altogether, that's likely, you know, a likely culprit for your problem, your squeak problem. So examine all of those things. And once you've found the trouble spot or identified the trouble spots, it's probably going to be multiple spots, but once you've identified them, you've got a few different options to fix it. One of the simplest ways is to gently tap a thin, really thin wood shim into the gap between the joist and the subfloor. Now you're looking to take up that slack, you know, that wiggle room that it's got. Just, you're trying to close that off. You just don't want to overdo this with the shim. If you force the shim too far or too thick of a shim, you can actually lift the floor above and create a brand new problem that you're going to have to deal with. So slide it in snug and then secure it with a dab or two of construction adhesive to hold it in place. Now, another approach, not the shim approach, but another one, especially if the gap is longer than a shim can realistically handle, is to use what I call the 2x4 method. I'm going to do my best to describe it. Put on your thinking caps as I'm talking, and then I'll put a link in the show notes to a video demonstrating what I'm talking about. But you take a piece of 2x4, maybe it's 18 to 24 inches in length, maybe longer, you know, maybe a little bit shorter. Take that piece and then run a generous bead of thick, you know, construction adhesive along one of the thinner edges. All right, this is going to be the edge that presses up against the underside of the subfloor. All right, so put construction adhesive on that edge and then press the glued edge tight against the subfloor, hold it up there tight against it, and screw the 2x4 sideways into the joist. What you're doing is creating a sort of glued ledger support, you know, beneath the subfloor. Now, that adhesive bond between the 2x4 and the subfloor is going to eliminate the flex, and the screws into the joist are going to hold the whole thing tight. It's simple, you know, really low cost, really effective. It is important to note, though, that this fix, unlike some of the other ones that I talk about, isn't going to be immediate. You know, that glue needs to set up and cure. And once that happens, then it's going to be permanent. And, you know, you're going to have a fixed squeak, no problem. But it is going to take time. Some of these other ones are instant fix. You know, once you've done it, the squeak's gone. This one, the squeak could persist for a little bit till the glue dries. So just keep that in mind. Now, not everybody has access to the floor from underneath. If you're working from above and everything else below is closed off, you can't see. And let's say you've got carpet in this particular area. If you're working with a problem there, you're going to have to look for something called Squeak No More. This is a kit that I ran into, Squeak No More. It's basically a number of little guides and things that you would use, and then some specially designed screws that you can literally drive right through the carpet and into the subfloor without damaging the carpet fibers. And I know this sounds ridiculous, all right? I was not hooked on this until I really dug into it a lot further. And I do think there's a lot of value to the system. I'm going to use it in my own hallway just to try it out. But the way it works is that screw, this special screw, you've got to use the right screw. That's why you're looking for this kit, Squeak No More. I'll put links in the show notes. The screw that you're using in that kit is engineered to snap off just below the surface of the subfloor, all right? So everything stays invisible. It doesn't damage the carpet. You know, the fibers cover where the screw went in, and you never feel anything when you walk over the spot because that screw gets snapped off within the subfloor. Now, I know that, like I said, it sounds literally crazy. I've got a video link in the show notes that demonstrates the process. It's definitely something to check out. If you don't have access to a carpeted floor, you know, that's got some squeaks. If you don't have access to that floor from beneath and you can't figure out how to fix it the other way, this could be a brilliant solution, all right? So keep that in mind. And this same system also works for hardwood floors. Now, it's not ideal in a lot of regards because you're literally having to drill a hole in the surface of your hardwood floor and run this screw through that. But again, the screw snaps off beneath the surface of the hardwood plank, and then that hole can be filled with colored putty. It's not ideal. I don't love that solution, but it does work if you've got no access to the underside of the floor from the basement. So I'll put links to that system, Squeak No More, in the show notes. Definitely check it out before you write it off. But here's where I want to add a little bit of a caution. If you're drilling into your finished flooring, you know, hardwood, or if you're drilling through carpet because you don't have access from underneath, you need to make sure that you know what's beneath the floorboards. You know what's beneath the floorboards. You don't want to suspect what's beneath the floorboards. You don't want to think you have a good idea of what's beneath the floorboards. You really need to know what's beneath the floorboards. You know, modern building codes, they're going to place plumbing and electrical away from the tops of floor joists. But in older homes or remodeled areas, that's not always a guarantee. So if you're unsure, you've got to find a way to check, you know, whether it's with a stud finder, with a live wire detector or something. You've got to find out where exactly the joists are, make sure you hit it, and make sure there isn't water or electrical around it. There are plenty of times when people do something like this, think they're solving one problem, and they literally drill into a water pipe. You know, it happens, and it's a mess when it happens. Don't drill into electrical lines. Don't drill into water lines. You've got to do your due diligence and make sure that you're safe, all right? I'm just giving you the tools and the method. You've got to make sure that you're safe to do this. So make sure you check it out. Another solution, moving on, that you're going to see online, especially when the squeak is caused by wood rubbing against wood, you know, board to board in a hardwood flooring situation, something like that. An online solution that's really popular is to work a dry lubricant like powdered graphite, talcum powder, even baking soda into the gaps between the floorboards. Now, the idea here is that the powder is going to settle into the seams and reduce the friction that's creating that squeak. And in some cases, this really does work. It really can help, especially if that squeak is surface level and not due to movement between the subfloor and the joists below. You know, if that's the problem, this isn't going to do a lot. It's got to be, you know, board-to-board movement that's causing the squeak. Then it can fix it. It's a temporary fix at best, so keep that in mind. And over time, that powder is going to shift or wear away with foot traffic and cleaning, and the squeak's going to return. So that's something to keep in mind. But there's a bigger concern, especially if you think you might ever refinish your hardwood floors or apply another layer of top coat. Many baby powders, for example, they contain fragrance oils or moisture-absorbing agents, and these things can penetrate the wood. Also, the powder, all of these things that you're putting on, once it gets down into the gaps between the boards, it can be, you know, kind of a trick to remove it. It's not always easy to get it out. And it's definitely possible that you could end up with adhesion problems when you try to reseal those floors later. You know, in worst case scenarios, you could even see visible streaking, you know, uneven finish absorption, or even fisheyes in the top coat. So while it might seem like a harmless DIY trick, and it might offer some short-term relief, putting powders or things like that into the gaps between the boards, it's worth thinking twice about before doing that. So there you go. Squeaky floors, they don't need to annoy you. You know, you don't have to zigzag your way down the hallway like Indiana Jones to avoid trouble spots anymore. The squeaks are fixable, and it's surprisingly easy, really, in a lot of cases. Now, of course, there are tons of other situations that I couldn't get to on the show right now that make this whole thing a little more complicated. I understand that. There's a lot of different things going on. And there are also many methods out there, you know, a lot of other methods for fixing squeaks. Before you start your project, before you jump into this, definitely go and check out some videos and you'll see all the different solutions that I talked about. You'll find more. check out the videos, do some research, make sure you're comfortable, and then jump in and get it fixed. And also, if you've got a method that I didn't mention, but which works really well, you know, even if it's just in your experience, let me know. I want to know about that. Radio@repcolite.com. Email me. And remember, speaking of emailing me, remember, I'm giving away two $100 RepcoLite gift certificates after the show today. If you want to be in the running to win one of them, all you got to do is email me at radio@repcolite.com and tell me something interesting. Tell me about your favorite method for fixing squeaks on your floor. That would work. Or tell me a topic that you'd like me to cover on a future episode. Tell me how religiously you listen to the show. You know, I don't care what you tell me, what you send, just send me something fun. Email that to radio@repcolite.com. Do that before 10 o'clock this morning. And then after 10, I'm going to draw two random winners from all of those entries. So get those emails off, radio@repcolite.com. All right, have you ever finished painting a room? You think it looks perfect, the color looks perfect, and after you get everything put away and the room back together, the sun comes in, catches the walls at just a particular angle, and you see that the finish is completely uneven. Have you ever run into that? That's paint flashing. And we're going to talk about what causes it and, more importantly, how to avoid it right after this. You're listening to Home in Progress, where the projects are real, the mistakes, they're educational, sometimes painful, mostly educational, and the only thing more stubborn than that old wallpaper on your bathroom wall is your determination to get it fixed. Proudly sponsored by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. Paint with a purpose, people who care, and everything you need to get the job done right. All right now let's talk about, you know, a kind of common paint problem, flashing. Now, it's not the kind of problem you're going to run into on a regular basis, but it's possible over the course of, you know, a normal DIY paint career, you'll run into it a couple times, two, three times, depending. But anyway, flashing is a paint problem that shows up as an uneven sheen or gloss or shine across a painted surface. You know, it's not a color mismatch. It's all about the way light reflects off different areas of the wall. You know, some areas are shiny, some areas are dull, all along the same wall. It's really frustrating. It's flashing. All right, so let's talk about why it happens in the first place. And there are a handful of reasons that it shows up. And they're almost always going to come back to either how the surface was prepped, how the paint was applied, or what kind of conditions you were working in. Let's start with the surface. One of the biggest culprits of flashing is uneven paint absorption. And that happens a lot with drywall repairs, you know, especially when they haven't been properly prepped. Patches using drywall compound, those areas really soak up paint really fast. You know, they soak it up at a much different rate than the surrounding wall where the paint is already there. You know, those areas are sealed up. This patch is not sealed up, and it really sucks the paint in. And that difference in absorption rate can really change the final sheen. And that's why priming matters so much. If you skip the primer or you use a really low quality one, it means the surface that you're painting is going to drink up your paint unevenly. Primer acts like a sealer. That's its main goal. That's pretty much, well, not its only goal, but it's its main goal. It acts like a sealer. It's going to create a consistent surface for your finish coat. And that's going to allow your finish coat to behave the same way, same finish, same sheen across the entire wall. When you skip that primer step, flashing becomes a real risk. Now, in a lot of situations, you can use your finish paint as a primer in these situations. You know, just hit those patches with a first coat of your finish paint before you coat over everything else. The first coat on those more porous spots, those patches or whatever, that's going to seal them up, and it's going to help your finish dry evenly. So not sealing those patches up with primer or with your finish paint, that's one of the main reasons that flashing occurs. Another reason is inconsistent application. You know, if you're applying paint too slowly or at an uneven film thickness, you can encounter flashing problems. Applying the paint too slowly, that means one section can start to dry before you've had a chance to blend it into the next. That's a recipe for problems. And if you apply the paint too thickly in some areas, that's no good either. In both cases, you're going to get lap marks, and those areas are going to reflect light differently and make your finish look uneven. You know, a lot of this comes about by using the wrong roller nap. You know, if you use a roller nap that's too short for your walls or for the texture on your walls, you're not applying enough paint, and you're going to end up with that paint drying before you can roll into it again and keep a wet edge. So you got to use the right roller nap. If you use too thick of a roller nap, of course, you end up putting on too much product. So finding the right roller nap for your project, for your surface, is really key. On top of all of those things, you've got the environment, you know, the environment that you're painting in. Drying conditions play a huge role. If it's too hot or too cold, or the humidity is really low, or if you're painting in direct sunlight, the paint can dry unevenly, and that's going to affect how it flows, how it levels, and it's another way flashing can sneak in. You know, even the quality of the paint, honestly, can make a difference. Some paints are just more prone to flashing because of how they're made. You know, whether it's pigment concentration, binder quality, additives, whatever, lower quality paints don't always level out as well, and that can leave you with a patchy finish. All right, so that's flashing. That's why it happens. How do you fix it? And the problem here is if it's already happened, you know, the paint's dry and you're looking at a wall with a patchy, uneven finish, there's not a really great, easy way to fix this. You're really basically just looking at a repaint. And in most situations, it's going to be just like touch-up work. You know, you can't paint a small area in the middle of a wall and expect it to blend in and fade away. You know, we always tell people that with touch-ups, you're going to have to take a larger area. Same with this flashing problem. You're probably going to need to paint corner to corner on a wall if you've got flashing on one particular wall. Or maybe you'll get lucky and there are a number of visual breaking points in your wall. If that's the case, you'll still be painting from visual breaking point to visual breaking point to hide that spot. Now, in some instances, you know, if you've done some patching and it was really severe, it's possible that, you know, you might need to literally spot prime those areas. Even though you've got one coat of finish on it already, it might be bad enough that you need to spot prime those areas before you hit everything with one more coat of finish. So if that's the case, hit those areas, feather the edges really well. You don't want to build up layers here. Feather the edges really well, let it dry, and then top coat everything. The good news is that when you do that, it's going to hide the flashing, you know, almost all the time. Flashing isn't going to bleed through. It's not a problem like that. You're going to hide it. The downside is, though, like I said, you are looking at a repaint in order to fix it. So with that in mind, let's talk about how you avoid it entirely, you know, right from the get-go. And the good news is it's not as bad as you might think. You just have to do a few key things right from the start, and you won't have a problem. So first and foremost, prime or hit those concerning areas, you know, the patches and stuff, with a first coat of your finish paint. Now, if you've got new drywall, I'd recommend a specific drywall primer before you move on to finish paint. If you've got patch spots on a wall, go and hit those with a first coat of your finish paint. Feather out the edges really well, and then when that's dry, roll another coat of finish over everything. That should eliminate all of your flashing concerns if it was just coming from the patches on the wall or the unsealed surface. So that's one thing you can do. Second, use high quality products. You know, better paints tend to perform better. Third thing, apply the paint evenly and consistently. And this doesn't just mean work quickly and evenly across the room. It also means using the same tool across the whole surface. You know, if you start with a roller, finish with a roller, and use a consistent roller nap. If you go from a 3/8 inch nap to a 1/2 inch nap, for any reason, or you switch from a foam to a microfiber, or even from a brush to a roller for cutting in, that change has the possibility of showing up as flashing or just a different look on your final finish. So try to stay as much as possible with the exact same tool all the way through the process. Fourth, watch your conditions. Try to work when temperatures and humidity levels are moderate. Don't stretch your paint too thin. Remember, thinner coats can flash more easily, especially if the surface underneath is absorbing at different rates. All right, that's flashing. If you have any other questions, swing out to any Repcolite. We'll walk you through what you're dealing with and help you figure out the best way to move forward and fix the problem if you're dealing with a problem, or better yet, we'll help you avoid all of these problems on your next project. Just let us walk you through what you need to know. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, I'm giving away two $100 Repcolite gift certificates after the show today. If you want to be in the running, just email me at radio@repcolite.com and tell me something interesting. I don't care what you tell me, just tell me something fun. Email that to radio@repcolite.com before 10 a.m. this morning, and then after 10, I'll draw two random winners. All right, if you found today's tips helpful, whether it was solving those squeaky floor problems, getting better results with masking tape, or maybe just you know, finally being able to understand what's going on when your paint's flashing. If any of that was helpful, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss another episode. And if you are enjoying the show, we'd love it if you could leave a quick review or rating wherever you're listening. It helps more than you know, and it's one of the best ways to support what we're doing. You can always find more paint advice, how-to guides, and inspiration at repcolite.com. And of course, if you've got a question or a topic you'd love us to cover on a future episode, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you. For Home in Progress, I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.